Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, we know a good credit score means better terms on everything from mortgages to car loans to credit cards, even getting an apartment or landing a job. But what about the millions of young Americans, like new graduates just heading out into the world, who are credit invisible? Also this morning, where is the future of technology taking us? We'll get a recap of outgoing Apple CEO Tim Cook's final keynote to programmers and tech enthusiasts at the company's annual Worldwide Developers Conference yesterday. And happening around town, summer is here, which means it's time to rally in the alley every Friday afternoon to kick off your weekend. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, June 9th, 2026. We are very saddened this morning, the news yesterday afternoon, that the Heminger family home burned yesterday. Mm. That is, of course, Carl and Kurt Heminger, the patriarchs of the Findlay Publishing Company, WFIN, and our sister stations, WKXA, 106.3 The Fox. The family home south of Findlay on County Road 75 caught fire yesterday afternoon. And boy, what a devastating. We have video on the website of the response from fire crews that responded to fully engulfed fire, the family home. Carl, of course, still lives there. That is really sad. And certainly we are our thoughts and our prayers for quick recovery there. Fortunately, nobody hurt, but that is really tough. And so our thoughts are with the Heminger family this morning. So that one of the big news stories yesterday here locally. Meanwhile, the aftermath from the big story over the weekend in Toledo, the shooting at the Old West End Festival, still no suspects in custody. Apparently, there have been reporting that they had someone in custody. The Toledo police actually took someone in for questioning, but as of right now, no arrests have been made, and the manhunt continues. TPD is asking for anyone who was there who has like cell phone video of what happened over the weekend at the festival on Saturday to hand that over, to share that video with police as the investigation continues. So a lot of things going on that are making headlines here this morning. I saw this on the news. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, on a much lighter note, McDonald's is modernizing their drive-thru, not the menu. They've been tweaking the menu for quite some time, but now they are apparently taking their drive-thru experience to the next level thanks to AI. Restaurant Business Magazine reporting the fast food giant is testing a new AI order-taking system called Arch IQ. Right now, it's being tested at a handful of locations across the country. I don't know where, but if it works, they will roll it out more broadly. The initiative is part of the company's brand new strategy called McDonald's Next, which it unveiled last week. One franchisee said that Google is part of the new project working with the fast food giant. I know this is not necessarily groundbreaking. Other restaurants have done this or have tried it out. My wife and I visited, I think it was a Wendy's, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, and our order was taken by AI. And hey, you know what? The computer got it right, which is more than I can say sometimes for the human order takers. So if it means I'm going to get my order right, then I'm all for it. I know that some people may not like this, but it did get our order right, so can't really complain about that. But anyway, next time you drive through a McDonald's, Mickey D's, don't be surprised if it is not a human on the other end of the drive-through speaker there. Kind of interesting. Saw this story yesterday, and I thought this was kind of interesting. And I'm not sure how I feel about this. I'm not sure what to make of this. Apparently, and this is a, I'm not sure where this story was published first. But anyway, I saw it on the Newswire. It says, young people today are intentionally dating people that they find unattractive. They're intentionally dating people that they find unattractive. And the reason is they want to improve their romantic skills, treating dates like emotional cardio. That's what they say. One woman in New York, 26-year-old, says practice dates with less appealing matches help individuals let go of unrealistic expectations and reduce the pressure. Because if you're dating someone you don't find that you're not attractive to, there's no pressure. Well, it's hard to argue with that, I suppose. Serena Kerrigan, who describes herself as a dating creator. Dating creator? Okay. I don't know. These kids today, they're just weird. Dating creator. I don't know what that is. Anyway, she supports the trend, saying photos can't capture real attraction and lower stakes dates help people show up more authentically. When you kind of feel meh about someone, daters stop performing and just act naturally. And then those are skills that they can apply to future dates with people they are genuinely interested in. I don't know what it says that young people today actually have to practice acting naturally with individuals that they are attracted to. I don't know. It's just weird to me. Dr. Deborah Kissen, who's a clinical psychologist, warns against treating potential partners like practice dummies, although she acknowledges that dating is a social skill that is improved through repetition. The trend, it says here in the story, reflects broader social isolation issues as Gen Z seeks to regain comfort with face-to-face interactions amid app fatigue and dating burnout. And I don't know, the thing that I thought when I first saw this is, you know, maybe you date someone that you kind of feel about, you know, not really all that enthused with, but who knows? Maybe if you're authentically yourself and the other person is authentically themselves, maybe you find out that that person you think is meh turns out to be the love of your life. Because sometimes it actually happens that way. You know, when you're not trying to impress someone. Just a thought. It's been known to happen. Yeah, this generation just figuring that out. This is big news. This is big news. hot sauce enthusiasts may face limited options as pepper supplies dwindle. Oh, it's getting tough out there. You know, supply chain issues and all of that's been in the news. And rising grocery prices, the foods that we buy because of all of these issues. And now it appears pepper supplies are dwindling and hot sauce enthusiasts are in trouble because of this. Apparently, specifically Scotch bonnet pepper supplies in those Caribbean hot sauces are in short supply. Back-to-back hurricanes, heavy rainfall, disease, and pests have devastated crops, forcing producers to cancel orders and absorb dramatic cost increases. The prices of these Scotch bonnet peppers temporarily spiked to 10 times the normal rate after Hurricane Melissa hit Jamaica last year, with overall price increases over the past 2 years of somewhere around 50%. Jamaica serves as a primary source for these peppers, these specific peppers. Some farmers have switched to hardier, more profitable crops instead. They're not growing peppers anymore. They're growing like sweet potatoes, despite the growing international pepper demand. Companies are responding by stockpiling peppers, developing resilient hybrid varieties, and funding genetics research to strengthen the supply. But for now, there's a hot pepper shortage. just so you know. Wow. Just in time for the summer barbecue season. That is not what you want to hear. That is not what you want to hear. And speaking of supply chain issues, America's protein obsession is colliding with a supply chain reality, as high demand is leading to some whey protein shortages that could send prices soaring. Those are the protein mixes that you see in the stores, the powder that you add to, you know, your water. You make the this protein mix. The cost of protein concentrates has shot up about 20% over the last 6 months and up 83% over the past 2 years. And some suppliers say they are already sold out for the remainder of this year. This is according to a report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Among other factors, experts cite the increase in people using GLP-1 medications. Interestingly enough, they are in turn increasing their supplemental protein intake through these, you know, supplements, these concentrates. And food manufacturers have raced to stock up with protein-enhanced products accordingly, creating everything from protein cold foams at Starbucks to packaged goods sold on grocery store shelves, including protein-enhanced breakfast cereals, box pastas, and snacks. Costco recently reported in its third quarter earnings that it saw significant growth for items including protein snacks and protein bars. And so all of this is creating a protein shortage. So stock up. Wow. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Chance of showers and storms today with a high in the 80s. Chance of showers tonight, low around 70. The Ohio State Highway Patrol is asking all drivers to do their part in promoting roadway safety during what's been characterized by safety officials as the 100 deadliest days of summer. The Highway Patrol says the time period from Memorial Day through Labor Day sees an increase in traffic on the roadways, and with it, an increased number of both serious injury and fatal crashes. The Highway Patrol is reminding drivers to drive sober, slow down, and put the phones down. The summer months also encompass the primary motorcycle riding months, and more than half of all motorcycle-involved crashes occur during the 100 deadliest days of summer. Get more on our website. Multiple fire departments battled a house fire south of Findlay. The fire on County Road 75 began a little before 1 o'clock Monday afternoon, sending smoke high into the sky that you could see from miles away. The fire appeared to start in a garage shop area and then spread to the house. The occupants of the house and their dogs were not injured. The house is owned by Carl Heminger, one of the owners of Findlay Publishing Company and WFIN. Carl and his brother Kurt grew up there, and Carl lives there currently. The house was built by their grandfather. See some video from the scene in this story on our website. The Fort Findlay FOP Lodge 20 Foundation says its Cops and Cones events are returning this summer after a very successful inaugural season last summer. FOP Foundation Director Teresa White says Cops and Cones is about creating positive interactions between youth and law enforcement.
It helps them to see police officers not just as maybe a robot with a badge, but as an actual human being. And it also helps our guys as well. It helps the officers because every single one of these people is happy to see them. And that does not happen on a regular day at work. So it does lots of good things for their mental health as well.
The first Cops and Cones event of the summer will take place Wednesday from 5 to 7 p.m. at Deitch Brothers on West Main Cross. Remember, you can always get more news anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, of course, we all know that a good credit score means better credit terms on everything from mortgages to car loans to credit cards. But millions of young Americans are considered credit invisible, meaning they have little to no established credit history, which in turn means accessing financial opportunities like loans and credit cards and even apartment leases can be significantly more challenging. Joining us this morning is Intuit Credit Karma consumer financial advocate Courtney Alev. Courtney, we're talking primarily about young people just starting out who in many cases don't have enough of a credit history to even be scored. What does that mean when one of those individuals goes to apply for a loan or even an apartment and no credit score comes back?
So these folks who fall into that credit invisible category just don't have enough data. They either don't have a credit report or enough data to generate that score. And without that score, it can be really difficult to be able to rent an apartment, to be able to finance a car, because lenders look at the credit score as evidence of confidence that you'll be able to pay that off. And so that can really make it challenging, especially for young people or anyone new to credit, to get started. In fact, we know that many of them tell us they already feel that they're at a financial disadvantage because they don't have that credit history. And so it's really important to start figuring out how to build credit so that you're able to rent that apartment, to finance that car, or whatever milestone you personally need to accomplish that requires having that score.
So it's the classic catch-22, isn't it? You can't get a loan without a credit score, but you can't get a credit score unless you have some sort of credit. So where should someone start if they are in that situation where they have no credit history?
Absolutely. So for many years, that's been the case. But the good news is that there's new tools out there that can actually help people start building credit by building on things they're already doing, like paying their bills on time. For example, Intuit Credit Karma has a tool called Credit Spark that can take your existing phone and utility payments and translate it into positive credit history to help you start building that credit score, without taking on debt. So these type of tools are a really great option and exciting thing for those who are just getting onto their credit building journey, because they might already be showing these habits, paying bills responsibly, but previously had trouble maybe accessing credit.
So let's speak to those young people who, you know, like say a college grad or even a high school grad who's going right into the workforce, just starting out, and you have absolutely no experience, no history. What advice would you give someone who is just starting that financial journey?
If they're just starting out, the first thing I would say is try not to be intimidated. We know finances can be really scary, and a ton of young people tell us they have no idea where to start. But the great news is there's tools like this that are available to them to help them start building credit. But on top of that, I'd also recommend that they just understand where they're starting from. You know, that means understanding what income do you have coming in, if you've got a job, what expenses do you have, maybe you're paying rent, paying bills, do you have any debt, maybe that's student loan debt, how much is it costing you? Having that kind of starting point can help you start then building those early financial habits that are going to really, really pay off over time. That's things like setting up automatic payments if you do have a credit card to make sure you never miss a bill. It could be sending $10, $20 a month to a savings account to start building an emergency fund. The best thing to do when you're super early is just know exactly where you're starting from and then make some of these small, manageable goals a big part of your daily life, because that consistency will start paying off in terms of momentum on your financial future.
Okay, so once we have established that starting point, then how can individuals start building credit responsibly? And I know we could talk all day on this, but just some basic principles here.
Absolutely. The key tips I would say are always pay your bills on time, keep those balances low, and don't buy things on credit that you can't afford to pay off at the end of the month. Starting really small, maybe one Netflix subscription on a credit card with autopay, that can help you build that monthly positive payment history without needing to take on debt. It's a helpful way to start.
Now, ideally, before young people get out on their own, parents should be instilling some of these lessons and these good financial habits. We know that doesn't always happen, so let's take a moment and speak to mom and dad. What is your advice for parents who want to help their kids build these good financial habits?
Absolutely. It's a great idea to start early and start small. You can help them build habits by doing things like encouraging them to save a little bit of their allowance each month, or even putting a little extra in their piggy bank to demonstrate interest so they understand how money grows over time. And what's really important is a lot of families never talk about money. And so you can start role modeling, talking about budgeting, talking about trade-offs at the dinner table, or even asking your kid to make hard decisions, things like spending their allowance right away or saving up for the pair of headphones that they really want. And then as they get older, you can actually help them on their credit building journey. Because if you have good credit, you could actually add your child as an authorized user on one of your credit cards, which essentially gives them a head start on building their own credit score, which can be hugely helpful as they're getting out on their own.
Now, it's important to point out that adding your son or daughter to your as an authorized user on your credit card doesn't necessarily mean you hand them a card and give them carte blanche to go use it necessarily.
Right, exactly. That's a great opportunity to have that conversation. If they are getting a card, what can they use it for? How much? It helps really instill those habits as well as that conversation between you and your child, which can really help build that confidence going forward.
And then, one of the other things, kids are bound to make mistakes. Young people are bound to make mistakes. We all have. What are some of the most common mistakes, financial mistakes that young people make, and how can individuals avoid them? Let's offer up a cautionary tale here.
Sure. The most common mistakes people make are honestly some of the simplest. It's things like missing your bill payments. It's spending outside of your means. It's only making a minimum payment on a credit card bill when you can afford to pay more. Those are the type of things that can really get people into trouble. And a really good rule of thumb is to only use credit for things that you are sure you can pay off within that month. Because otherwise, you might make a purchase, not think it's too expensive. You don't pay it off in full. You start getting those interest charges. And that purchase that didn't seem too big really starts costing you a lot and adding up over time. And that's why it's so important to just understand how credit works, how debt works, how to budget, because then you can start making those small changes that are going to pay off over time. But the number one rule of thumb, I would say, is to only use credit if you're confident you can pay it off at the end of the month.
To that end, and I know, again, we've all made these mistakes. I know I have in getting into that. I'm spending more than I can pay off in a month. And before you know it, all of your income is going to servicing that debt, and you're relying on the credit card to make the purchases that you need to make that you can't make because you're servicing the debt. It becomes a negative snowball there. And I guess you could argue that may be what credit card companies hope for, but that's not the situation that you want to get yourself in.
Exactly. You don't want to find yourself there. And one other tip that I find very helpful to help avoid the situation is, even though your credit card bill is only due once a month, it can be a great idea to pay it off weekly, even daily if you wanted to. But it's something I still do. I log in every week. I pay off my bills. And that also helps me see where my money is going. So I'm not just keeping my balances low, but I'm seeing what I'm spending on. And if I need to rein it in or make some decisions, I can do it then instead of waiting until the end of the month and then getting surprised by a bigger bill than I thought.
Absolutely. A lot easier to do in this day and age of those online tools. So great advice there. Again, Intuit Credit Karma consumer financial advocate Courtney Alev with us this morning. Real quickly, where can folks get more information?
They can download the Credit Karma app or visit creditkarma.com.
Courtney, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So Apple is holding its annual Worldwide Developers Conference this week, and while it's not as flashy as their September event where they introduce new products, it is perhaps even more important because this is where we learn about the new technological advancements that will drive future innovations that will shape how we use those devices. And the highlight of day one was the final keynote address by outgoing Apple CEO Tim Cook. Joining us this morning to recap is PC Mag mobile expert Ayaz Akhtar. And Ayaz, going in, there were some high expectations that artificial intelligence would be front and center at this event. And just to give some context, this is a field where Apple has really lagged behind. Why?
So Apple's big push in general is to push privacy. Privacy is very important to Apple, and it's really hard to do AI correctly if privacy is a concern, because theoretically you want your AI to know everything about you. But how can you let that information go and also keep it safe? It's kind of a weird idea. So Apple's had trouble with that for a while. They've been trying to do it on their own for a long time, but they had to turn to Google. They set up a deal in January where Google Gemini will basically be the backbone for Apple Intelligence. And at Worldwide Developers Conference, they basically showed a Siri that looked remarkably like Gemini. And myself, I use Android quite regularly. I was like, I've seen these features. I saw them last year. There they are. But on the good side, if you use an iPhone, you'll get some really cool stuff coming up.
So is this a stopgap measure? Is this their solution to the AI question?
So I think what we're going to see first is a game of catch up. We're going to have this. We'll have feature parity between Android devices and iOS. iOS and iPhones will be able to do the kinds of things you kind of want it to do. If you tell Siri, hey, can you just go ahead and make that appointment for me? It could do that. If you want it in your calendar, it can go to your calendar, that kind of thing. I think we are going to see a different evolution of this because essentially Apple is using Google's stuff as a backbone, but they can build on top of it. So theoretically, I'm expecting them to kind of fork at some point, because unlike Google, Apple makes tons of hardware where Siri should work from one device to the next. So I would expect all the changes to happen with Siri, so that way it works the same on iOS, iPadOS, macOS, VisionOS. I think we're going to see that kind of thing eventually, but right now it's all about, hey, look, we said it could do it. Here's what it can do.
Here's what it can do. And what can it do? Like you said, for those who are familiar with Gemini, they're going to recognize many of these features that have been around for a while. But for those who haven't and have been, you know, those Apple purists who are relying on Siri and maybe aren't aware of some of the, what are some of the new things that this will enable this new generation of Siri to do?
Well, I think the biggest thing that people are going to enjoy is context and follow-up questions, because in, with Gemini, you can ask it question one, lead to question two, leave for like a day, come back and ask it. It has a somewhat of a persistent memory, or you need to go back into that particular chat to have that conversation again. Siri, for the longest time, you could have a question or maybe two questions, and then it does not know anything anymore. So if you want to keep track of things and you want to be able to find that needle in a haystack, Siri is going to be way better at that. That's what we're going to see here.
Yeah.
It's persistent memory, knowing your personal context. It'll know you. So if you're saying, hey, I need to know what size shoe does Billy wear? He's my kid. It'll know who you're talking about.
And because all of this is being powered by Google, going back to the whole privacy thing, it still gives Apple the ability to say, hey, we're still protecting your privacy. We're the, you know, safeguards of your privacy. And, you know, that's first and foremost for us. Is that kind of a fine line to walk?
I think it is. And Apple kept saying that they are going to be doing a lot of on-device AI, which makes it feel much more secure because things aren't being sent out. Mm-hmm. But it did mention things are going to be sent out to the cloud, but they call it private cloud computing. And the idea is that Apple can't see what's there. So yes, you will be using their servers, but there's no way for that company to see it. And if you remember recent stories with iPhones, police officers trying to get into iPhones, Apple frequently says, we don't have a back door. We really don't know how to, we can't do this for you.
Yeah.
And we've seen this tested over and over again. This would be possibly a truly private version of AI.
Because what I was wondering, kind of going into all of this, again, since we're about to see a leadership change at Apple, where they are in terms of driving innovation. I mean, earlier this year, the biggest headlines Apple made was the rollout of new hardware, particularly the MacBook Neo, which I have right here, as a matter of fact. So I am all sold on that, but that grabbed an awful lot of redefined what the low-cost entry-level computer market could be, really disrupted that. And I guess I'm looking at what is going to be the focus of Apple moving forward. Where are they going under this new leadership and shaking up the market?
Yeah, sure thing. So John Ternus, the incoming CEO, is known as a hardware guy. And rumors are that he's not exactly happy with Apple Vision Pro. So that might take a bit of a back burner at the moment. For those of you who don't know, the Apple Vision Pro is an amazing AR headset, but it also costs over $3,000. And that's a really hard ask for anybody to buy at this point. But I think what we're going to see is the hardware working together much more cohesively. The software's already there. And we've seen a lot of standardization of parts, like the same processor that's in the Vision Pro is the same processor that's in the MacBook Pro. It's the same one that's in the iPad Pro. It's in these devices. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking what we're going to be able to see is a new era of consistency between devices. It won't be like, I can only do this with my MacBook. I can only do this with my iPhone. With a smarter Siri and the technical hardware, the massive, insanely powerful hardware they have, mm-hmm. I think what we're going to see is like, essentially, you can tell your iPhone you need to do something. it'll probably tell your laptop to take care of it because it's got more a beefy processor, better fans. And then maybe it'll come up with a spatial way for you to see it on your Vision Pro. Like it's going to be that kind of ecosystem. I think Apple's going to further solidify with this move.
Yeah. Real quickly, the conference continues all this week, and much of it is very high level technical stuff for developers and programmers, hence the name. The real excitement will come from how those developers and programmers will use those tools in the future. That being said, and aside from AI, what are or will be some of the things that enthusiasts should be most watching for?
You know, this was a very strange WWDC where normally they talk about all of these APIs and SDKs, tools for developers to use and lock into, and we can make great apps.
Yeah.
And they didn't really talk about many of these things at all. They were talking about Core AI, which is a new version of its AI SDK. So apps can use Apple's intelligence to access different parts of iOS and other operating systems.
Hmm.
So what I think we're going to see from the app developers is their apps playing friendly with Apple's AI. So like if you want to say, make this event in my calendar, maybe a third-party calendar app has it open. So yeah, you can write to our app. It's going to be that kind of thing. But Apple really did not spend a lot of time saying, here's how you guys can use it too.
Hmm. It'll be interesting to see what happens over the coming week. And of course, as we move forward and how all of this is deployed. Now, people get this new Siri AI. That'll be coming in the fall, right? That'll be when this is all deployed, or that's the plan.
Yeah,
of course, that's what they said. That's what they said a couple of years ago, too. But it looks like that's actually going to be happening.
Yeah, this is the fun one. So Siri should be the new Siri, they call it Siri AI, should be coming out in the fall. From the demos and all the text, they said it might be in beta when it comes out, so it might not even be fully functioning. Then you have the thing, it only works in English. It won't be available in the EU because of certain concerns. So the US is getting a version of Siri. It's coming, and it's going to be different, but we don't know how fully baked it's going to be, because even in the demos we saw, they were quite pedestrian. It wasn't anything spectacular. So we're really hoping that Apple can make those pedestrian experiences happen, but we won't know till the fall.
So stay tuned. Again, PC Mag mobile expert Ayaz Akhtar with us this morning, breaking it all down from the Worldwide Developers Conference this week. Thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Not that there's anything funny about a shooting. Obviously, we had that. We saw that over the weekend in Toledo. But this is a rather unusual story, a story with an unexpected twist. The mayor of Baltimore is speaking out after a Safe Streets worker was arrested in a weekend shooting. Safe Streets, you see, employs outreach professionals to mediate brewing conflicts. So you can avoid these types of things. And police say one of those professional mediators working for Safe Streets, 51-year-old Antoine Burton, is now facing charges in a Sunday night shooting himself. maybe they need to vet these professional mediators a little bit better. I'm not sure. The mayor of Baltimore, Brandon Scott, called Mr. Burton's actions a disgrace, saying he violated the trust placed in the violence prevention workers. Mayor Scott stressed that the case appears to be isolated and says Safe Streets will continue its work to reduce violence across the city. Wow. Let's see what else is going on in the broken news. This out of Florida, there's always got to be something strange going on in the Sunshine State. Nate Winkler of Port Charlotte, Florida, was recently robbed of his beloved Sandra. Sandra is a 7-foot fiberglass sandbar shark replica. Somebody stole his fiberglass shark. It was a replica of a sandbar shark that he'd actually caught and released on a fishing trip some 10 years ago. So he didn't keep the real shark, but he wanted a memento, so he had a fake shark made. Shark replica made. And now someone's stolen it. Sandra had long been affixed to a wall outside of the front of Mr. Winkler's house until she was stolen. He put a message out on social media. Sandra, if you're out there, know that we're worried sick about you. And for those who may have taken Sandra, please know that we are not upset with you. We just want her returned safely home. Who steals a 7-foot fiberglass sandbar shark? What would you do with that? If you stole it, what would you do with something like that? I mean, we've had unusual thefts in the broken news before, but that one is definitely weird. Mr. Winkler says he reported the crime when it happened, and he asked the detectives if they had anyone who was experienced on the police force that had done missing shark cases before. Unfortunately, they do not. He says he's a little concerned because it's this detective's first missing shark case. He's looking for someone more experienced in shark thefts, but turns out they don't have any. All right. Someone's grand old flag got him in trouble in Stamford, Connecticut recently. Apparently, according to a report, a 3,000-square-foot American flag flew into a transmission line during a storm, an electrical transmission line during a storm, causing thousands of residents to lose power this past weekend. And you've heard of, squirrels, crawling in and getting zapped, and, birds and, things like that. But this may be the first power outage due to an American flag, 3,000-square-foot American flag. After the flag first got tangled up in the line on Saturday, crews started working to restore power. However, persistent winds then on Sunday shifted the flag before it could be removed and caused another power disruption. Not just once, but twice. The story goes on to say that the flag was eventually completely removed. So, I mean, I'm all for flying your flag, but if it's gonna cause power outages, maybe that's not a great idea. I've been thinking about it. From the international file, the broken news, authorities in Australia have confiscated more than 100,000 live cockroaches from a single breeder in the country's largest exotic invertebrate seizure. They've busted a cockroach breeding ring. Now, why in the world would people be breeding cockroaches, you ask? That was my first question. Well, by the way, it says the illegal insects included Madagascar hissing cockroaches and Dubia cockroaches. Is that how you pronounce it? It is they're both species that are prohibited in Australia. But why would someone do this, you ask? Well, officials believe the exotic roaches were sold as reptile food for people who have, reptiles that feed on these things. Snake catcher Stephanie Lesser suggested pet owners use crickets or wood roaches instead for their lizards that they, because now the cockroach trade has been busted in Australia. Both cockroach species that were part of this breeding program cannot be legally imported, kept, bred, or sold in Australia, regardless of how they were obtained. The country maintains strict biosecurity controls to protect agriculture and native wildlife from invasive pest infestations. So, how would you like to end up in the slammer and have to explain to your cellmates why you're there? What are you in for? Well, I was running a big cockroach breeding facility. They're breeding cockroaches illegally as food for reptiles. What a strange enterprise. All right. And finally, here in the broken news, this is kind of a sweet story. Two baby birds have hatched inside a police motorcycle storage compartment in Washington State. In Puyallup, Washington, the police department there, officers discovered the unusual nest after moving into their new headquarters, where a mother bird built her home and laid four eggs in the storage compartment of one of the department's motorcycle patrol vehicles. Anyways, they have those storage, like, side bags, side containers. And the bird got in there, made a nest, and laid her eggs. Police say the mother bird has done an excellent job caring for her babies, keeping them warm, fed, and safe in their unique nest location. Officers and staff monitor the feathered family from a respectful distance as they grow. The motorcycle was not in active service and was used only for traffic officer training, and now they can't touch it until the birds fly away. Department officials expect updates as the remaining two eggs may still hatch, potentially adding more officers in training to their unconventional police family at the new public safety facility. They said they're in Washington State. So, a bird's nest in the motorcycle compartment there. At the police headquarters. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Glantz with OSU Extension. It's planting season. Drivers will be sharing roads with tractors and farm machinery. Be alert for slow-moving vehicles, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this spring to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. New research on religion in America from the Pew Research Center. They study this in various aspects of religion in America quite frequently. And I thought this was very interesting, talking about the number of Americans who are born into the Catholic faith versus those who convert to Catholicism. And about 1.5% of all American adults have converted to Catholicism. This is according to the study, again, Pew Research Center. Nearly 4 million Americans are Catholic converts, representing 8% of all U.S. Catholics. So 8% of the Catholic population, 1.5% of American adults as a whole, have converted. However, what they find is Catholicism loses more members than it gains through religious switching, with 8 former Catholics leaving the faith for every convert that they gain, which I thought was kind of interesting. And of course, as you might imagine, most converts come from Protestant backgrounds, 59%. 22% had no religious affiliation growing up, and nearly half cite marriage to a Catholic spouse as their main reason for converting. And this may be a surprise. I know this was to me, and the one thing that kind of caught my eye in this whole research. Catholic converts actually attend Mass more frequently than lifelong Catholics. 38% versus 28% attending weekly. That was a surprise to me. I would have figured that would have been the other way around. But no, Catholic converts actually are more frequent visitors to Mass, attendees at Mass. Converts also lean more Republican at 60% compared to 52% of what they call cradle Catholics. You all right over there?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doug Jenkins is with us from the Findlay-Hancock County Chamber of Commerce. Rally in the Alley is kicking off this weekend. With summer being here, that means it is time to kick off your weekend every Friday afternoon at Latham Courtyard. And you... It sounds like from your morning here that you could probably use a Friday kickoff. Maybe
I could
a few adult beverages to celebrate the end of the week. All of that.
Everything okay there? Right as we were getting ready to go on here, decided to spill my entirely full cup of coffee all over my desk. And that was, that was not great. That was not a great move.
So just in time. It's these kind of things that you can recover from with Rally in the House. Almost like on cue. It's almost like you were demonstrating just how important this is to have a way to sort of cut loose after a hard day of work, hard week at work.
You got to practice what you preach. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, I'm at maximum stress this week. Yeah. So when Friday rolls around, I'm ready for it.
All right.
But yeah, Rally in the Alley kicks off this Friday at 5 o'clock in Latham Courtyard.
So for those who don't know, and I can't believe that there aren't people that, you know, there are people who don't know how this works or what this is all about. Give us all of the details about Rally in the Alley.
Yeah, absolutely. So Friday nights over the summer, we'll be in downtown Findlay at Latham Courtyard, right next to the glass block building, where it's from Heck Rentals. They let us use the space. We've got a band for free. We've got free food from a local restaurant each Friday, and then free water and beers for sale during the event. It's a great way to wind down. We'll be there from 5 to 8. So, you know, you get off work on Friday, come down, catch a few songs, hang out with your friends. It's always a really fun way to kick off the weekend in summers here in Findlay. And we've got a pretty stacked lineup this year.
So, yeah, it's every Friday beginning this Friday, except you're going to be there, not going to be there on July 3rd.
That's correct. Okay. Well, the July weekend will be off, but between now and July 31st, every Friday except for the 3rd.
Okay. So circle that on the calendar, and who you got, what you got going on. Give us the rundown here.
All right. So this week, Spoiled Rotten will be the band kicking things off. Ralph Mitchell and his crew, always a good time. We'll have free food from Main Street Deli while supplies last there. So be sure to check out some snacks from there. It's always a good snack. If you know, you get a little snack there and then check out the downtown restaurants or check out some other restaurants for the rest of your evening. And then this week's sponsors are Impact Credit Union, Hilton Garden Inn, and Ralph's Joy of Living. So a good crew there helping us volunteer with all the tents and the ticket taking and the beer sales and all of that. It'll be a lot of fun.
And then next week, Tongue and Groove is the band of the week.
That's correct. Perennial favorites, Tongue and Groove. They'll play twice this year, once on the 19th, once on the 31st to wrap things up. We also have the Reunion Band, which is always popular.
Yeah.
Schifferle Road, which we've had a couple of times, but we haven't had them the last couple of years. So we're really excited to get them back. My Cousin Eddie, it'll be their first time playing Rally in the Alley. And 100 Proof is proven to be a pretty big draw for Rally as well. See how I did that there?
Yeah. So that's kind of the lineup through the month of June and July. And as you mentioned, you've got snacks. It's kind of finger foods and you know, just something to kind of tide you over. Main Street Deli is this week, but a lot of other restaurants stepping up to provide the food.
Yeah, we've got the Fern. They always do the meatloaf sliders, which are excellent, by the way. Mm-hmm. Culver's will be there. Sodexo from the University of Findlay. Detroit is new this year. That'll be exciting.
Okay.
Call of the Canyon Cafe, also new this year. So they're really excited to be a part of it. And also Mancy's from the Hancock Hotel will be taking part. So. Yeah. A pretty good sampling of restaurants from across the city.
And as you were saying, got to thank all of the sponsors who help make it happen through the course of the season.
Definitely. Again, Heck Rentals, love them for providing the space for it. Couldn't do it without them. You guys at the radio station for helping support us with the, you know, putting me right on the air after I spill my coffee. So appreciate that. Visit Findlay helps with promotions. Fast Signs of Findlay, Litter Landing does the recycling. So excited to have them on. And then, of course, our weekly sponsors, Millstream Area Credit Union, Ark Stacy Insurance Services, Harold Chuck Incorporated, Hancock Federal Credit Union, Oral and Facial Surgery, Dr. Bradley, Garrett Gregory, Tom Hyatt Plumbing and Excavating, First National Bank, Flag City Morning Rotary, Kuba Dermatology, State Bank, Yellowstone Landscape, RCR Technology Group, Fifth Third Bank, Taylor Automotive Group, Ohio Logistics, Loan Depot, Encompass Engineers, Narconex Power, and Hicks and Zerker Capital Management. I did that on one breath. I didn't know if you wanted me to go down the entire list, but I just went for it.
Well, you know, they have stepped up to sponsor, so it's the least we can do. Although I was thinking maybe what we should do is list the people who have not sponsored, because that might have been
it would be shorter
list. Yeah. But no, thanks to everyone for stepping up and making it happen once again this year. So again, it begins on Friday. And when is the time? It's right after work.
Right after work, 5 to 8, Latham Courtyard, downtown Findlay, right next to the Glass Block Building. And we look forward to seeing you here. By the way, Chris, last second promotion, Farmer Share Breakfast is this Thursday. Tickets are still available for that, too.
Oh, okay. All right. So you can still pick up. How do folks get tickets to that?
Easiest way to do it, go to FindlayHancockChamber.com in the calendar section. You can just sign up online.
Okay.
And it's $7 and you can eat a lot of bacon.
So breakfast on Thursday and then drinks and snacks after work on Friday. So
exactly.
We got you covered there.
We had a lunch thing. We'd have everything covered for you.
So, and by the way, if folks don't know where Latham Courtyard is downtown, just follow the music. It'll be, you'll be able Absolutely. To figure it out. It's not very difficult.
We'll be rocking.
Follow the crowds. Once again, Doug Jenkins with us from the Findlay-Hancock County Chamber. Rally in the Alley beginning this weekend, this Friday evening, and we certainly hope to see you there. Doug, thanks very much for the update. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Also, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well, and we thank you very much. Coming up tomorrow on the program, adulting is hard. One of the hardest parts, also maybe one of the most unexpected. Young adults trying to figure out how to navigate the healthcare system for the first time. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.